adequate without any fancy sauces or herbs and spices. The sons and Ryan and JB had a soup of vegetables, followed by a plain trout with a green salad, and then slices of rare roast beef with whipped potatoes and thin-sliced carrots. The dessert was a sponge pudding with honey and thick cream. Beer accompanied the meal. Baron Tenbo sipped at his soup, picked at some of the tender flesh of the fish, and barely touched the main course. Twice he had a coughing fit, dabbing hurriedly at his mouth with a white napkin. Ryan noticed that the napkin came away from the Baron's pale lips, flecked with spots of scarlet.
My apologies to all.
Should you go and lie down and rest, Father?
I shall be lying down soon enough.
Sooner the better, Father dear.
The meal ended early. The brothers stood with an uncanny synchronicity and bowed stiffly to the Baron, turned on their heels, one to the right and one to the left, and marched to the doors and out of the room. Tenbo's threw his napkin to the floor and reached for his stick.
There are many days that I think deeply about following my slut wife into that long blackness.
Life's better than no life.
Tenbos was on his feet, moving clumsily and slowly.
Shit it is! Don't peddle your homespun bullshit at me, Cawdor. It insults me and demeans yourself. Life has become a grinding journey that I wish to leave. My doctor says that the road is measured in weeks now. And I am glad of that.
Your collection of blasters? Can we see them now, Baron?
No. No, Dix. Not tonight. First thing in the morning, if you are early risers, and I figure you are.
The two friends watched him limp out, his one leg dragging behind him.
Shame. Think we should do something about those sullen, silent little bastards?
Can't say it didn't cross my mind. What do you reckon?
Tenbo seems like a nice guy, for a baron.
Sekmen like him. Doesn't seem to be the same way with the boys.
Agreed. So?
No. It's tempting, but I think not.
Traitor would have cleansed him, Ryan.
Sure. He's not me and I'm not him. Can't wipe up everyone's spilled blood.
Abe came around from the beating, unable at first to decide whether the vigilantes had blinded him. He was in so much pain that he couldn't even begin to decide what hurt most. Every inch of his body was throbbing and bruised, and his head felt like someone had levered open his skull and poured in boiling battery acid. His tongue was swollen, his lips cracked and dry. Abe tried to lift a hand to touch what he guessed were some broken and missing teeth, but nothing happened. He got the same result when he tried to bend his legs to a less uncomfortable position. It seemed to Abe that they had tied him up and then started the brutal battering. But there might have been some punches and kicks even before the rawhide cord was knotted viciously tight around wrists and ankles, then looped around the rusting iron bars that protruded from a massive block of fallen concrete. A fourth piece of cord ran from his neck to a tumbled fence behind him, holding him stretched out and helpless.
Got you and we'll get your murdering friend. Start after him after dawn. He won't get far. There are others of us out and around the hills on the watch. Lots of us was kin to Jesse. Don't figure on just walking away and letting go. Blood for blood's what we say.
Abe hadn't even seen the work boot that struck him with savage accuracy just behind the right ear, tossing him back into the darkness. Around midnight, Abe became aware that the wind had veered more southerly, taking the rain away with it on a bank of low cloud. The skies cleared and the stars broke through, pinpoints of diamond light staring down impassively at his suffering. It became much colder, and he found himself shivering. Once or twice it crossed his mind to call out and beg for mercy. Even if it were only the dubious mercy of a bullet through the back of the head. Abe's mouth began to water, and he realized that he was also extremely thirsty. But his previous experience with his captors made him realize that asking for something to drink wasn't likely to be a very good idea. The only thing that seemed likely was that they weren't going to kill him during the night. This was the best hope he had to hang on to. It gave Traitor a little time.
one of the few times in my life that I've ever felt reasonably safe in the middle of a ville.
Ryan grinned at his companion's words, but there was some truth in what the armorer had said. Tenbos, despite his obvious serious illness, seemed to be on top of things, including his two unpleasant and threatening stepsons. There was no evidence of evil or cruelty, and the Sekhmen simply went about their work without bullying or sadism.
Yeah, if we weren't in a hurry to meet up again with Traitor, I wouldn't mind taking up the Baron's offer and staying here a while longer.
Me too. Hope he's well enough to show us his weapon collection this morning.
Main thing I want is to get some decent food under my belt. Maybe it'll see me through the next few hundred spine-rattling miles in the Armawag.
Death doesn't often let you know he's coming. Yeah?
It's Edward Tenbos, gentlemen. The Baron wonders if you would like to visit him on the top floor of the tower to view his firearms, and then to the first floor for breakfast.
Thanks. Tell him that the answer to both of his invitations is yes, and we'll be with him in about 5 minutes.
The only thing that worries me is those two boys. Something seriously creepy about them. Maybe it's that everyone knows they're just waiting for Dead Man's Boots.
Maybe. I know what you mean. I wish Christy was here. Could use her feeling about things.
Taking your blasters?
I don't know. You?
Don't really want to hump the Uzi and the scattergun up and down stairs.
Doesn't seem dangerous.
True.
Fire blast. Look, I'll just take along the Sig Sauer. Should be more than enough for any pissant problem that might blow up in our faces.
The stairs were dark, curling around and around, with only an occasional slit casement to let some filtered light through. One of the great problems of windows in Deathlands was the amount of ordinary glass from pre-dark days, a century back, that had become crazed and dulled by the harsh elements. There was a pair of Sekhmen on the landing below the arms collection. By the time that Ryan and JB had reached them, the two guards had tensed, recognized them, then relaxed, waving them through.
Baron's been there for an hour or more. Got a half dozen of us to try to do some cleaning and dusting.
Even had his shitbag sons, pardon my speech, up here. Truth is, since his illness and the business with the slut-whore wife, well, the Baron sort of lost interest in his blasters.
You'll be the first ones, first outlanders, up these stairs for months and months. Still, best go on ahead. Don't keep him waiting.
JB ran his finger along the curving balustrade, brushing his hands together.
Filthy.
The light was far better at the top of the old tower, with windows on every side. There were a few padded seats remaining around the periphery of the large circular room, left over from its use as a revolving restaurant. Baron Tenbos was sitting on one of them, his head leaning back, motionless. Ryan stopped at the top of the stairs, holding up a warning hand to JB.
Chilled?
Far from it, Mr. Dix. Forgive me for not rising, but I found the climb rather more steep than I remembered it. It's a real bastard becoming feeble when once you were so strong. Do come on in, gentlemen.
The air of neglect was palpable. The room smelled of disinfectant and polish, and they could both see the evident signs of some hasty and half-hearted cleaning. But cobwebs still clung to the corners by the old mock chandeliers. The carpet was dirty, with spots of oil and grease marking the delicate floral pattern. Tenbos waved a hand.
A sorry thing these days, but mine own. Feel free to wander and look at anything.
They've been fired lately?
JB picked up a poor German replica of a genuine Wheelock pistol.
No, I haven't. I did once, but there's no ammunition kept up here now.
Why?
Ryan squinted along the chased barrel of a superb saw-handled dueling pistol, still carrying the maker's gold cartouche on the breech plug.
Is this a Parker?
JB joined Ryan, taking the blaster with an almost religious awe.
Beautiful. William Parker, 233 High Holborn, London, England. Massive magnificence, someone called it. Walnut stock, 9-inch smoothbore octagonal barrel. There's the sighting groove out into the tang of the false breech. There. Look at the lovely plates. Silver here, protecting the stock by the barrel crossbolt. Single-set trigger.
Ryan watched and listened inside.